Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Arnie Luke's here at the Crossroads, and I'd like to welcome my guest panelist, Alan Moran. Welcome, Alan.
Hi.
All right, it's pleased to have you, Alan. In fact, I'm always pleased to have you, because I think there's so much to discuss, and this is a very deep subject. For people's interest, the backdrop, this is a photo of the Lower Lakes in South Australia, an aerial view. I think along the beachfront there and where the Murray Mouth actually closes. So I'm just going to touch on a few articles just to lay the groundwork for today's discussion. We pick up in regard to the water reform under Howard, 2007, and of course Turnbull was the minister. And the promises made, the first warning sign that these reforms were beginning to fail, the previous laws. Flawed implementation of the basin, which put bureaucrats in charge rather than allowing communities to be at the front and centre of the solution. I find it interesting these old articles because they show you the sales pitch. And of course, this goes back 4 years ago, Murray-Darling water buybacks. They were capped. A bill passes the Senate. And then it was ABC in March of this year. Missing billions of litres of water in the Murray-Darling Basin. Then it was this one here in July, how the taxpayers are funding huge corporate expansion in the Murray-Darling. Then we have the Canadian pension funds are buying up water rights in Australia, and so they're 490 million. And then it shows here also, this goes back to 2017, how a top water bureaucrat resigns after corruption allegations. I wanted to touch on something here. To me, it's the nature of human beings, if you like, and the possible flaw that's within us all. If the money's high enough, if the promises are great enough, then most people, almost all people, could be compromised. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. This is Lord Acton. Great men are almost always bad men, even when they exercise influence and not authority. Still more when they superadd the tendency of the certainty of corruption by authority. By authority. Now, to me, the proposal for having an authority of such power over really what it is the eastern states, including South Australia. Water allocation to me is essentially disproportionate. My serious concern is that there is too much power and that the interests of the individuals and the communities and the states are not being considered. And how could they possibly be considered when only one person or one authority or one commission makes that decision? Alan, your thoughts?
Well, I think the key thing is to try to get things to move things away from individual power. You have to have ownership. If you have ownership with rights to buy and sell that ownership and the fruits of it, then no longer do you have individuals arbitrarily deciding how the assets would be used. And here we've got we're talking now about the Murray-Darling system. The ownership has been determined long ago. We sometimes think of it in terms of an interstate ownership, and that's true in one sense. But there's another aspect of the ownership, and that is the ownership of the irrigators, the rights the irrigators have to the river. River flows, about one third of those flows have been vested in irrigators in all states, all four states that are affected by the basin, and those rights have to be considered to be sacrosanct. They can't be taken away. What we have seen in we've seen two aspects of that under some sort of stress. The first aspect was when the government, the federal government, and one of your clips showed that they bought off 1,500 gigalitres, which is actually 2,750 gigalitres altogether, have been taken from irrigators for environmental flows. That is for other flows along the river to water the forest, to do various things with the water, which the authorities concerned thought was very valuable. And that's cost $13 billion. It cost a lot of money. there's another set of flows, another issue, separate issue, that is that people looking at the lakes that you have there and saying, well, look, there's about 2,000 or maybe even 5,000 gigalitres goes to those lakes, into those lakes, and goes straight to the ocean. The people on the lakes have certain values with them for fishing, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. some irrigators, mm-hmm. boats, things like that. But people further up the river say, well, we could use that more productively. Mm-hmm. And to my mind, if they can do a deal, if they can say, listen, that water that goes on those lakes, creating an artificial situation of freshwater lakes, but that's by the by, that water we could use ourselves to grow food, olives, anything, you know, or fiber in terms of cotton. Mm-hmm. We can use that more productively, and we will pay you for it. Mm-hmm. That water is worth a couple of $1 billion, quite a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And it may well be that there's a deal possible to be done, that those who have the rights, and some of them are irrigators and they're concrete rights, some of them are kind of corporate type rights, that is those who want fresh water for boating or for fishing or whatever else, somehow that their rights have got to be decided, mm-hmm. and they've got to be, and if in fact a deal is done, they've got to be compensated. But it's the issue there is, could that water be used productively, more productively upstream than it is in those lakes? Now the answer isn't that therefore we need a great god, a Lord Acton figure, as you mentioned there, who will make that decision, but the decision has to be made between those who have the rights and can they do a deal? And yeah. if they can do a deal, then there's a win-win for everybody.
Yeah, I find it's interesting, Alan, because someone has bought that water up. We call it the federal government, but it could just as easily have been a corporation, and then we'd be in exactly the same position. So I think that in itself doesn't clearly answer the question. But the other is that the backdrop behind me, the actual use of the water, irrigators is only part of it, of course. And I'm going to cut across to another screen, and I'm going to show our audience. This is a backdrop behind us of essentially the salt content of the groundwater in the area around the lower lakes. The lower lakes being around my head, and essentially the darker colours, the orange, the browns and all that, are unusable, bore water, unusable. So this is really, these areas would actually be so reliant on fresh water. Now, I think in one of our forums before we mentioned that some water has been piped from Mannum, or the Murray River anyway, piped across to parts of the Fleurieu Peninsula. But I understand that's only a small amount, that generally water's not there, and that these freshwater, essentially freshwater lakes, are integral to the viability of so many people. If the farmers were suffering because of the brackish, and this was the case in actual fact at the millennial drought, that the water became brackish because there was no flow or insufficient flow through these lakes, and they suffered terribly as a result of it. That's in living memory, millennial drought, the year 2000, around that time. Now, the droughts in New South Wales, they've been going on for a few years, and I've got friends over in that area. They're keeping me up to date, not only with the droughts, but also the bushfires. And I happened to go for a drive through that area, through the forests to the west of New South Wales, up and down. I ended up at Hervey Bay, so I covered a pretty good amount of ground to have a look for myself to see how parched it is. And it certainly is parched. To me, that's a very, very important point. But the thing is that in our discussion, Alan, we're not actually looking at some of the other issues. And this particular issue I want to put on the table, and this goes back that New South Wales has been exploring plans to turn coastal rivers inland. This one here, there's another one there. It's to do with the new Bradfield scheme. One is to do with the Toowoomba and the Clarence River. And of course, the report from the New South Wales Legislative Assembly, 324 pages, it's quite a significant. And then of course, this final one, 20-year infrastructure options for water New South Wales. These to me are all part of the picture that if we only look at the lakes, if we only look at the lower lakes, South Australia, then I've got to ask the question, and I know I've asked it off the air, but I'll ask it again. Just where the coast almost closes near where Alan's eyes are to the side of his eyes, you'll see that the Murray mouth is almost closed there. And so such a small amount of water from this area goes out to sea. And that's not something that when we start talking about the numbers of water that flow to South Australia, I understand it's only 7%. Only 7%. And this population in South Australia is 7%. And so you look at that and you think, 100-year-old agreement, it's not that far wrong. We need to look a little bit further and perhaps take into account what New South Wales could do to help New South Wales. Alan.
Well, I think they could do an awful lot, but the Commonwealth has got the whip hand on this, unfortunately, now, and the Commonwealth is obstinately determined not to return that money, that water that they've taken from irrigators back to irrigators. They're still pursuing some phony environmental programs about watering the forest, etc. So that's definitely an issue that for governments one way or another, but. Unfortunately, the de facto situation is that it is a Commonwealth issue now. Not, I'm inclined to agree with you that it shouldn't be. However, it is, and it's difficult to stop that. Now, you mentioned the stuff, the water coming from the north, from the Clarence and areas like that. I mean, there's a lot more water there than there is in the Murray-Darling. I mean, there's like, I think well, we talk about 30 gigalitres coming down the Murray-Darling, there's three times or four times as much water in the north of Queensland, which could be turned south and water vast areas. I don't know whether it would actually make sense to turn it south and turn it all the way into the Murray-Darling Basin, but there's plenty of other fertile soil between the northern Queensland and the Murray-Darling Basin, which could be watered, could be irrigated. But it's really a question of for a nation, it's a question of does that make sense? You know, we're talking about a capital cost of $60 billion or more dollars to do that. Does that actually make sense? And then we've got this peculiar Australian issue that if it makes sense, is it going to be possible anyway? Because we have so many environmental and other regulations and paper burden issues that even if it makes sense, it's very likely that governments would not permit it anyway because there'd be pressure groups. The whole notion would be stymied by different lawsuits to prevent it happening. And there's a real problem we have with red tape and green tape and other issues in Australia. So, you know, in a sense, when we're talking about water, we're talking about a whole lot of different matters. We're focusing on the lower lakes here, and is it a good idea for them to do a deal with irrigators upstream to make better use of that water? Then there's the issue of the government has having seized or having bought water off irrigators for spurious environmental reasons. Is that a good idea? Why isn't the New South Wales government more highly focused on that? And there's this third issue about the whole notion of water and whether we ought to have a brand new Murray-Darling Basin, an even bigger one, but to the north of there, using the waters from the Clarence and a whole lot of other smaller, very, very fast-flowing seasonal rivers, northern Queensland.
No, I think that opens up an entirely new point of view, Alan. And I do note off air we had discussions about where the environmental flows go, and they're certainly not great flows through the Murray mouth. They're certainly not. So the lower lakes, in my view, are not really an argument in this case. What we're talking about is where are the other environmental flows going, and are they actually going through New South Wales and Victoria? To me, that's out there, and I don't really want us to go in that. But I do want us to look at this thing about the interference that is going on and the actual meddling that's gone on with the Murray-Darling, and also, of course, the ramifications, the constitutional ramifications. I know the Water Act 2007. I know that the demonstration went to Canberra. But in actual fact, the outworking of a solution for New South Wales could be or should be on the steps of the Parliament House in Sydney, not in Canberra. They should be there because the actual political will is in New South Wales. The people suffering is in New South Wales. And that beautiful poem, "I love a sunburnt country of droughts and flooding rains." I mean, come on, this is every time. I've got a little book here. It's called The Struggle for the Snowy, and it's about the establishment of the Murray-Darling and also the redirecting of the Snowy River, and how that actually had arguments between the states. Honestly, it was 100 years ago they were arguing exactly the same as they're arguing now. No different. And that to me is why it's so important that the states actually participate in this area vigorously, on their own behalf, on behalf of all of these people that live in this area behind me, those that live in Victoria, Alan, and those that live in New South Wales. This is a discussion that needs to take place. And having an umpire arbitrarily make a decision that might be, "I'm going to choose you over you," it's just, well, hang on a sec, hang on a sec. We've got a drought. We always have droughts. We always have droughts. If it's not in one part of Australia, it's somewhere else. And if it's not droughts, it's floods. But we always have it. That's the nature of what goes on. And we have to be good husbands of the world around us and just manage it. The Murray-Darling is a reflection of that management. I think it's a wonderful achievement. The Snowy Mountains, again, another wonderful achievement. But we must stop, not stop now. We must move forward. And with a growing population, increased demands on food industry, all those sorts of things, we've got to consider other options apart from, as you said last week, derating the river. Alan.
Well, I think that's correct. I mean, when you say that that it's up to New South Wales, well, it is. But the fact of the matter is, the Commonwealth has seized control of this. And if New South Wales said, "Look, we made a terrible error. We should not have taken that 2,700 gigalitres away from farmers and given it to these spurious environmental concerns. We want the water back." Well, the Commonwealth said, "You can't have it." They'll say, "You can't have it back under any circumstances," because they have vested interests. They claim that they've signed agreements in this area and that area, and that they have, vested interest in terms of green votes, etc. The Labour Party wouldn't allow them having it back. It would never get through the Senate to resell that water back. That's what should be done. Resell the water back to the farmers who will pay the highest price of it, and probably that's New South Wales farmers. But the fact is that the Commonwealth has seized control. I don't know what we do about that. It's beyond, it's beyond our capacities in terms of redesignating the Constitution as it should have been, because it has moved in a way which is certainly deleterious, but in a way which is almost irreversible. So we have that water. And New South Wales farmers, and therefore the National Party and the Shooters and the Fishers and various other parties, are arcing up because their farmers are now extremely short of water. Of course, it's a drought, but drought has been severely aggravated by the 20% of irrigators' water, which has been taken off them or bought off them by essentially by the Commonwealth to be given used for, quote, environmental, unquote, purposes. Is for anything other than productive purposes, when what we need is that water for productive purposes. The Murray-Darling is not a natural free flowing river. Hasn't been for 100 years. Will never be again. Shouldn't be. It's a working river. It's a and the working river, makes it not only more productive for agriculture, but it's also a more pleasant river. We can use it for leisure interests. We can use it for fishing. It there's more, easier to for fishing. It's better for leisure interests. All of these things, have departed from the natural environment. The natural environment of the Murray-Darling is an arid river which is in flood every few years, and there's a trickle every other few years, and it's not pleasing to human beings.
No, I agree with you, Alan, and I think that if you like, the deconstruction of what the Liberals have done isn't an easy task. But that doesn't mean that the New South Wales government, as could the Victorian government, is actually continue to develop their own water management strategy, because Section 100 of the Constitution has not been declared null and void. It
No, I'm sure. I think
hasn't been,
that,
and they
yeah.
can, they have the right to do it, and they can fight back. This is the, to me, this is the point, that their state governments can fight back on behalf of their farmers, and they can actually start looking at infrastructure projects that can open up the western side of the Great Divide. They can open it up to these drought affected areas that, of course, has caused the Darling to basically stop flowing completely. So I think that that's, to me, that's a very important parts of the consideration is political will, not not beating up South Australia and saying, well, there's all this water, let's buy it off. Because the trouble is, you look at these giants like the Canadian Super Fund coming in, and they can buy anything. And Australia is just swamped by the power of some of these organisations, absolutely swamped. And it is really frustrating because this is not only our environment, this is our backyard. This affects each and every person in South Australia, certainly, but also in New South Wales. And they've got to look for permanent answers with droughts and flooding rains. That's what I think. Yeah.
Well, they can buy anything, of course, but and a lot of rich people can buy anything if they want, but they've got to show a profit. I mean, this isn't a firm that will. This is people's superannuation accounts that they represent. They're looking around the world at how they can best invest it. They're not going to invest it and buy water rights in Australia and just sit on them for no reason. They've got to use them, so they sell them to other parties. And
Yeah.
I don't see any. I don't see that as being as offensive. I don't see it as being offensive at all. The offensive thing is governments have seized the water which was being used for productive purposes, and actually, as a result of that, those funds who actually did buy the rights have made a bonanza because
Just hang on a sec, Alan. You, just what you said. Those funds have made a bonanza. In other,
not because they're doing anything wrong, but
I
because
didn't suggest it was. I didn't suggest it was right or wrong. What I'm suggesting is that the price of water has increased fivefold, and the
Exactly.
farmers are getting a thorough kicking,
Yeah.
and then those funds are making a bonanza at the expense of the farmer. This to
Not
me
really.
is.
No, not at the expense of the farmer.
Well,
They made
who's.
an answer because the government has actually stipulated, has rigged the game, and these funds saw the game being rigged and thought, right, we'll buy the water. Price is going to go up. They were perceptive enough to do so. But the price only went up because of government action, not because of the funds themselves did it. They've taken advantage of that price increase caused by our own government.
I know. I agree. It's the behavior of the conservative liberals, if you like, has been horrendous. It has been so destructive to our farmers. And the thing is that when the water price goes up, I said it last week, a week before, when the water price goes up, the food price goes up. When power goes up, food, industry, everything goes up. These are inflationary pressures, and it's an erosion of your spending power. So we don't actually win out of this.
No.
Those that win, that are able to exploit it to their advantage, and you say, well, okay, but this is not wise activity on the part of our government or our bureaucracy. And I think that it's, I think, honestly, when you look at the level of corruption with what I said about what Lord Acton said, the nature of man, what price? What price? What is their price? And unfortunately, I think their price is very, very low. And it's very, very frustrating that as Australians, our government are not taking our best interests into heart. And this to me is a reflection in the policy. I in a sense, I get hot under the collar because you can see almost design in this whole thing. It's this hasn't happened willy-nilly. This there is purpose, there is design in this, and our farmers and our communities are suffering, and they shouldn't. There should have been some more forethought, and to me it comes down to the, if you like, and I'll bring my story to a close on this, Alan, but I'll allow your closing comments. What it does is it touches on why do we have federation in Australia? Federation. It was actually the states that agreed to form the Commonwealth. And the states agreed that these were the only powers that the Commonwealth would have, and the smaller states argued and argued and argued, and they held out, and they held out for 10 years during the conventions to ensure that they had representation, equal representation in the Senate. this argument, this bullying argument of larger states knocking the little ones around, has been going on since before federation, and we've answered it, I believe, with federalism. We have. But when the federal government seizes power and then hands it to a, if you like, an overall authority, I see nothing else but trouble. And look what's happened. Nothing else but trouble. Alan, closing comments, please.
Well, I think you're right. Nothing else but trouble. The federal government has seized the power on the on to use that water for purposes that aren't in the national interests, as I see them. They're in the interests of some people, because they've seized the power to take away water from productive use to unproductive use. And people that you know, they have this vast propaganda campaign about the fact that all there was salt infused, and there was the water was never going to go again because of climate change and God knows what. All of these are spurious reasons. It's spurious reasons that the environment of the Murray Darling is stressed. It's massively better than it once was now. We had a cap put in there at 11,000 something gigalitres for irrigation. We've taken that cap. We've reduced that down by 2,750. All to please a certain segment, which is represented by Malcolm Turnbull, for example, or Tony Burke on the Labour side, a whole host of the Greens. These people want to actually squander productive use of the water for some sort of chasing some illusion of some kind of environmental purity that never existed in the first place, and in doing so are impoverishing the farmers. And it's actually bringing this headlong fight between different states, because they're blaming different people. That, they're blaming the speculators, or they're blaming South Australians for doing this. The blame is squarely in the hands of government, especially the federal government, but the state governments have been party to this as well, in taking the water away from productive use, and therefore causing the price of that water to go through the ceiling, and starving the productive uses of an essential ingredient that is water itself.
No, that's a very good observation. Alan, I've really, really enjoyed having you on this program. This is the last for this season, and we're going to pick it up again in the new year, the second week of January. Thank you so much, Alan, for being such a vital part of information as a source, and for your generous attitude, your generous time allocated to our forum. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me on there, Arnie.
No
Good to
worries. No worries. Cheers, ladies and gentlemen. Arnie.